experts,
media experts,
linguists,
academics,
et cetera, dark
theorists,
academia.
Yeah. All of those things combined. That's the show with a dash of like contrarian energy, because I don't think I can approach anything without being just an absolute pedant, mm-hmm. a true contrarian. I always have to oppose things before I like them. That is my method. That is who I am. So perhaps dissecting things. Is this too personal? Dissecting things is
never.
Just a way for me to continue to be that way and not be called out for it.
Yeah. I think you have your pulse on the scene.
Yes, as do you. That is why we host this show about words and the words that are currently trending that we're using that mean more than what we think about them. Oftentimes, listen, I'm not opposed to fun or things being fun and silly, but I think there is a lot that is happening as a sort of subtext undercurrent to the language that we use every day.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Oh.
You said I'm not opposed to people having fun because I don't
but
know.
I
yeah. Come on, let's be real. In brackets that I'm going to read out loud, but I am.
Just kidding.
I'm a hater. Sorry, not sorry. But okay, here's the thing though. I don't necessarily think that argument is a solid argument every time.
I 100% agree.
I'm just going to say, you know what? I'm going to say it.
Do it.
Maybe
say
it's a
it.
Hot take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that
take
argument
it.
Works. It's like, let people just have fun.
Oh, the let people live argument when...
No.
It's just a way to let us get away with things, to let things to continue to be unexamined, which, like, I'll say it, that's boring. Things are obviously a lot deeper than we intend them to be, but the argument where you shouldn't even look at it, otherwise mm-hmm. that ruins some sort of fun and mystery, is kind of lame.
It's so lame. Okay, it's lame and vapid on a good day, and problematic and dangerous on a bad day.
I would agree with that 100%.
I'm just going to say it. Let boys be boys. Remember? That's how it started?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Almost every adage from a time ago has now come back, and we've all, like, collectively cringed in a heap about it.
Because we know.
Because now we know better, and we can talk about it, so...
Yeah.
There's no point in not talking about things. Come on.
Okay. Beautiful. Well... This is CADR, 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We're your hosts, and Natasha, which I've already said, and I'm saying that again. And today, with all that context, hope that made sense, we're talking about girl trends. Girl this, girl that, and girlification of things, everything under the sun.
Yep. Today we are unfortunately diving into the feminized prefix that is girl trends.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this is something that I think a lot of people are probably familiar with at this point, and if you're detecting a tone in my voice, it's because there is one, because it's almost overreported at this point, and it stems from like a long lineage of sort of this feminized prefix attached to things like girl boss, etc. But it has now been cropping up in things such as the girl dinner. Let's mm-hmm. all collectively sigh together. Like, I know that I'm one more voice in the room bringing this up, or like e-girl and girl rot and girl math. I mean, like, we know
drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. we know it. If you don't know it, I'm sorry that you know it. It has been happening. It has been coming out of people's mouths. It has been written about. There have been op-eds. There have been essays. There have been many short-form video contents.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about girl trends, I guess.
And we're just conging the machine.
Yeah. Who am I?
Who am I? This is nothing new.
But one piece of the infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. I will say, if you're hearing this for the first time, I envy you.
I don't. It sucks. It sucks to learn about it.
Oh, no. That's what I'm saying. I envy that you were not privy to this so far. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is like I'm not on TikTok, so I don't have a choice in learning about these things either way, because anything that becomes trendy on TikTok generally finds its way into all forms of media.
All ethers.
Yeah. I mean, in just like a lot of writing in general for TV and media, these words, they crop up so fast.
Like time.
It's hard to avoid. But maybe we should spend some time defining what a girl trend is.
Yeah. Tell us, Tasha.
Oh.
Being the resident girl here.
I am not. How dare you? Well, quite literally, it's a feminized prefix, and it's most popularly known right now, I would say, for the term girl dinner, which I guess is like a kind of crappy charcuterie board at best. That's been rebranded and packaged as a girl dinner. And there are other versions of this. I have a little list, and it follows a loose timeline.
But
I would say the first instance of the feminized prefix girl blank starts with girl power.
Yes.
Right?
Remember that?
Yeah. So girl power, 91, popularly attributed to the Spice Girls, but most unknowingly is that it is actually attributed to Bikini Kill in an early zine of theirs. There was a lot of like feminist zine literature out at the time, and obviously the Spice Girls had really brought that to the forefront with girl power. It had its moment then. I feel like it quickly moved into either girl boss, mompreneur, or adulting around the same time, which, of course, these are not instances of the word girl being literally used to modify something, but I feel that they are all sort of categorically similar in that they're doing this thing where it sort of takes, it sort of like takes an infantilization stance on what adulthood means to women. And it's pretty, it kind of downplays your position as a woman in the adult world, as much as that is itself a loose category. But then we also have Just Girly Things Tumblr, which was a popular Tumblr trend at the time that just, you know, showed pictures of typical girly things. Gonna be totally honest, I was never a Tumblr kid. I know about it, but I can't give you a good example. Just think of like shoelaces that are touching, forming a heart or something like that. That would be Just Girly Things. And then we have the Visco Girl and we have the E-Girl. all the way to girl dinner and girl rot, which I would say are these sort of like rebranding of depression.
Did you say girl rot?
Yeah. So we all know girl dinner, which is like depression meals, if you know, you know. Just sort of a rebranding of the sort of tired, burnt out types of dinners that you would put together quickly, which are hilarious looking and probably tasting. They don't follow any sort of like nutritional guideline. It's just kind of like, haha, look at this hilarious meal that I put together. It is making light of depression, but it also is minimizing it. It's complex. Girl rot does a similar thing where it's like romanticizing this very depressive thing of staying in bed all day. I like to think of the very, very popular My Year of Rest and Relaxation kind of energy where it's just like, yeah, it's this branding of feminized depression, which involves looking very pretty, lying in bed all day and doing nothing.
Lana Del Rey.
Exactly. And that's like my sort of brief list of girl things. I'm sure there are a lot more because it's sort of exploding. It's sort of everywhere.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I will say, just in terms of like TikTok trends are not TikTok trends anymore because they're not just within the parameters of TikTok. They're internet trends, right? And so it's just that now the zeitgeist is on TikTok and then it bleeds everywhere. I'm not on TikTok as well. But am I predisposed to a lot of conversations happening there? Yeah, because I watch them like every other millennial on Instagram 2 weeks later. So that is a metaphor of some sort, go figure. But yeah, no, as you were saying, Tasha, it's unfortunately an endless black hole of everything girl. We have girl boss, of course. Never. Mm-hmm. Hashtag, please forget. And then, you're like it girl or that girl.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have phrases for anything from like hot girl summer to hot girl walks. And okay, please allow me one hot take.
You've already had one, but you're going to have another.
Can I have one more?
Yeah, that's what this show's all about.
Can we ban girl trends?
I mean, yes, not to give like show my cards too early, but like, I mean, I've been harboring a tone this whole time, but like, I don't like it.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know, crazy, right?
I thought you loved
it
that.
It seemed like I was very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I don't
but
enjoy
it's,
it.
It's okay. So it's wild in the sense that, I don't know. I mean, not to put my sus glasses on, but I smell marketing campaigns and mm-hmm. paying tax. But also, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, sure. We all know this. People hate anything that girls are into. Biggest example, astrology. But then, everyone also loves to talk about those things, whether they hate it or they love it or wherever they stand in the spectrum of things. That becomes the popular, like, point of discussion, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say. And in some senses, it makes, again, girls, whoever they are, as an identity, as peoples, as a community, easy targets of consumerism. And it's like, oh, yeah, they're vain.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They're vain, but they're also gullible as heck. And here are all these things which will make you live your best life.
It's a really good example of consumer branding gone especially haywire, mm-hmm. or even consumer aesthetics gone especially haywire, because it's very easy to slap that prefix on almost anything that is not inherently feminine, despite the fact that I don't think anything can be inherently feminine, but mm-hmm. you can very easily brand it that way. It works best to build community if you're being really forgiving, but at its worst, I feel like it more so inspires purchases. It's very easy to use this to sell packages, to be part of something.
Totally.
And I do feel like it's especially potent right now because those are things that people are actively looking for. We have no forms of like embedded non-commodifiable community or ritual. Mm-hmm. So you can put a girl couch out there and people all feel like they're part of a community for getting a secondhand couch or
That's,
you know,
really sad, but yep.
It's like with these lacks in the world, it's really easy to find a sense of belonging in a way that is still very marketable, commodifiable.
And individualistic.
And individualistic.
The end of the day.
And also limiting, like, not to get too far into the analysis portion of it, but like, come on, it is exceptionally limiting. It rests on the back of essentialism, which is the thing that drives a lot of like gender roles and the binary in general. Mm-hmm. Like, essentialism is the belief that you are born a thing, and that's your predestined kind of like destiny, your predestined destiny.
Yeah.
Instead of being born and then coming into an essence. Mm-hmm. Essentialism is like, oh, well, that's it. You just have these traits and you have no choice in the matter.
Oh, yeah. And I imagine there are essential feminists out there who might be making the argument of like, let the girlies have fun. But then I would argue that, okay, so here's a little example from my Silly Little Life, which I am not going to... Okay. So, sure, we all have days where we don't feel like cooking and we're just going to throw something together because obviously you have to survive and sustenance and all that. And so my roommates and I often, when we go grocery shopping, we would have like frozen stuff. We would grab frozen stuff. And the most popular is like a spinach cheese pizza, right? And that's like, quote unquote, our lazy meal. Mm-hmm. So regardless of our gender, sexuality, any orientation, we are united on that front. And that's our, quote unquote, lazy meal. But that has been branded as girl dinner, which is... really bizarre.
Nothing to do with your gender identity.
At all.
It's just a spinach pizza.
Absolutely not, right? And it's like, yep, we all have the days when we're hella burnt out and we're just going to throw something together. However, I'm not going to call that like, oh, that I need to eat that as a dinner every day because I was born as a girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And okay, maybe getting too pedantic about it, but...
That's what we do.
That's what we do. The person who started this trend, I mean, I'm sure they didn't know that it's going to be huge. She's 28 and I think an assistant on some show, if I'm not wrong. And I think New York Times did an interview with her and she was talking about, oh, like it was just like something cheeky. And it was to show that... I might be wrong. I don't know if she said it or this was part of the analysis portion, but I read something as like, if your boyfriend is not around, then this is kind of something you put together, which is also like a very weird analysis in my brain. But mm-hmm. The point is like when no one's looking, then you're kind of just going to eat anything. But again, we all have those days. But we also have days where we want to cook elaborate meals and feel good about ourselves.
I think the thing is like, we don't, I mean, maybe I don't want to speak for you, but I feel that what you're saying is you don't necessarily have a problem with the idea of a girl dinner or even the instance of a person saying this from whatever perspective. But what you're taking problem with is rather it when it sort of like gains momentum and becomes this like flaming meteor that everyone is attaching themselves to, and it becomes in itself a trend and a big marketable thing that we all say in place of saying many other things. Like, you can call it a lazy meal and you can call it a depression meal and you can call it just a pizza time, and like, it doesn't, we don't all have to collectively say girl dinner. And the problem that we have is that we're all collectively saying girl dinner. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this symbol that we have created. And I mean, we create it under certain circumstances, which we can talk about. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the people's fault. I don't think it's the original person who uttered its fault.
Yeah.
I think it's like the systems of oppression that we all live under that mm-hmm. create these circumstances. And we don't all need to continue to let these words work in the way that they're working.
Totally.
Because I think we can laugh at it and be over it, or we can laugh at it and we can use it to identify ourselves to mm-hmm. the world and to ourselves. And I think that's dangerous.
Yeah, no, totally. So, of course, I mean, surprise, surprise, it lacks nuance. But then it also becomes like, oh, there's a lot of gender essentialism going on. It's men do this, women do this. So, of course, also regressive. But then it becomes... sort of this people's entire personality of like, instead of like lazy meal being very specific but not as catchy versus like girl dinner, is like, what does that even mean? It's so wild. Like, the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, what question mark. And something that when I was looking into this and doing some research, I mean, honestly, the bottom line is girl sells. Right? Mm-hmm. We talked about it. Slap mm-hmm. girl on anything. I mean, it's not just internet trends. Like, starting from books, remember when there was a summer, and I don't know, loosely I'm going to say 2013, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo and then you had Girl on a Train, and then you had Gone Girl, which was made into a film. The Gone Girl era was huge.
Oh my god, yeah.
They slapped.
Broke something open in my brain.
I'm sorry. Just slap girl. That was huge. And all those books were being turned into big blockbuster summer films.
All these publishers, why you gone done this to us?
Yeah, yeah. So this is not new, Girl Dinners. And then we have the era of TV shows. We have Two Broke Girls, we have New Girl, and then we have Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not forget. We're
Or let's forget.
Let's forget. Yeah, like late 20-somethings who were like mid 30-somethings by the end of the show, and then it's Girls.
So it's clear we've been obsessed with this idea of the girl for a long time. And I know that it's because it's a great category to market stuff towards. It used to be something interesting that I learned recently is that the category of like teen is a relatively new age construct. And like, let's be clear, a lot of these terms are just constructs, like adult as an age category is a construct, etc. But teen as an age category is less than 100 years old. And it reflects a time when teenagers were in mandatory education and there was a lot of technological changes, industry changes, and kids had expendable income and they were in school and they were for the first time in history not beholden to whatever their parents did for work. They had their own livelihoods. And they became a youth category that was immediately marketed to and branded to. And it's like one of the first examples of like the mass boom in advertising was advertising towards teens, which, you know, there's a lot of socioeconomic constructs that created the idea of the teen, but it is itself a construct and it is itself a branding construct, because what we know of youth culture is because of this push towards marketing stuff towards a group of people that had income that they never once had. So I think that relates a lot to this idea of the perpetual girl. And it sort of keeps, I think, like Gen Z and millennial in this category where you're constantly like young enough to be fooled and beguiled and sold things. Like it's a self-infantilization, and it's also sort of because of these constructs that have continuously wanted to sell to a certain category. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. It's the next iteration of the, like, sort of constructed teen category is this, like, perpetual girl, no matter the age, because even though millennial and Gen Z are sort of loose categories, I feel like it's very targeted towards these age ranges who don't have a lot of standing, economically, socially, etc. So it's very easy to continue to sell us things if we are choosing to call ourselves girls.
Yeah, no, that does make sense. But I will say, like, I will argue with talking about teenagers and teens, there is still this very specific range. Like, you're a teenager from age 13 to 19. But what's fascinating about the girl phenomenon and girlhood, that it's perpetual, and like there isn't any age range. If more and more so, we don't even know what girl means, because you see 30-year-olds and 30-somethings who are millennials now using the term girl, which Gen X's and boomers would perhaps frown upon, that, oh, like we would not be infantilizing ourselves like this. But then so much has shifted for us in terms of
behavior expectations.
Exactly. Economics and be it career prospects, be it life choices we're making. More and more people are identifying as child-free. We're farther and farther away from the dream of buying a house because it's hella unattainable. And it's more easy and fun, I guess, to like be self-indulgent and sort of just buy your $5 latte because, hey, you're never going to be able to afford even a studio in this city, in this economy.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that queer theory has explicitly dealt with for so long, which is the old adage, like, if you can't see it, you can't be it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to do with, like, these behavior expectations of quote-unquote adulthood. And if you can't see yourself in those positions, if you can't legitimately get married, you can't legally get married, or if you can't have kids, mm-hmm. or if you don't have access to housing, to like a decent income, if you're excluded from any of those things, then you have to imagine your own futures.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to this like reworking of time and of experience and of these age categories. Because if you can't see it, you can't be it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this bleeds into what a lot of millennial and Gen Z women are probably feeling in this moment, where you really don't have access to any of those markers of the traditional adulthood that you saw in your parents or former examples.
Absolutely.
I certainly don't see any examples of people in their 30s that I can like look up to.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I have access to things that other people have not, but I understand why we would infantilize ourselves in these moments, because we don't feel like we have it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks different to us. And to some, when it looks different, you perpetually stay in this moment of like diminishing yourself, of feeling like you are a child, which I would say you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a child. It's just a different adulthood. It's just understanding that that is an expectation of you.
Yeah.
That you don't have to meet, and you can still have fun, and you can still experience joy, and you can still be silly and dumb, because like you can't.
That's such a great, okay, I just want to say, Tasha, that's a great point, because yeah, just because adulthood for a lot of people is looking different doesn't mean they're not adults.
Exactly.
And doesn't mean that they should have to baby themselves. But it's almost like the age-old, like, women being apologetic. It's like, oopsies, this is my girl dinner because I don't have a husband and a kid that I have to cook for. Because I was reading something and people are like, oh, yeah, of course it's not called woman dinner, because that would be hella depressing. Nobody would want to associate with it, because that means you have a baby who you just put to sleep after being up for 2 days and your husband who probably is at war. So... nobody wants to associate with it.
No one wants to see that. Oh my goodness.
But it's like, no, and it's in some ways. So remember, adulting and how cringe it was.
Mm-hmm.
The girl trends, it's the same, but in worse. It's like, instead of being like, oh yeah, I'm such an adult, I'm doing laundry. It's like, no, look at me, I'm such a baby because I'm having my lazy meal for one day, God forbid, which we're allowed to have. And so it's like part things becoming a buzz, but part also like moral panic of like, oh my god, what did the girls do? And it's like, who are these girls?
Yeah, there's definitely a moral panic aspect to that. But you also said something really interesting, which is that like adulting was a verb. Well, I guess is a verb.
Mm-hmm.
And that girl is something that you embody. So
yeah.
It's another instance of this like transformation of the language that we're using to infantilize ourselves from something that you just merely do to now something that you full stop are.
Yeah.
Which is a huge change, because I think adulting was like word of the year in 2016.
Mega cringe.
Which is hilarious. But the other interesting thing about adulting, beyond the fact that it is a verb, you just get to enact it when you're doing laundry or whatever.
Yeah.
Was that it was another moment of like a huge marketing tool, because there were so many coffee table books at Urban Outfitters
of
that
course.
Were like 101 ways to adult or whatever. And this was like such a popular way to target millennials at the time, who were experiencing a lack of housing and like very low incomes and like no markers of adulthood, as we're in our, you know, mid-20s, like very educated population, everyone that is like currently in or just leaving school in various degrees. I mean, this is from a Western perspective, of course, but
mm-hmm.
highly educated group that couldn't access the same things their parents could access was reeling in this adulting moment. I have a lot of sympathy towards it. I know everyone makes fun of the word, but it actually makes me sad, because it marks a period of time when it feels like we collectively realized that we weren't going to get the things
mm-hmm.
And then it was turned into a bunch of like cheesy t-shirts and books, like a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like a huge joke on ourselves. And at very least, we could leave adulting behind. But with this girl business is you don't really leave it behind. You just become it. And you be part of a group that becomes it. There was no like banner of adulting that I felt like people congregated under. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. And with most things internet, it's very black and white, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you become this thing, but then that's all there is to you. And as you said, with adulting, the girl and girlies as like signifier of identity and aesthetics makes me sad sometimes, because I mean, in this day and age and post-COVID especially, we're really seeking a sense of community. Mm-hmm. Be it like a false sense and like a safety blanket and solidarity, but then, and so we're so keen to often jump on these trends, but not even that, just like embody these identities and these aesthetic, and ultimately I'm confused.
It is confusing.
And something else I think is important to mention is the whole concept of, again, obviously we've talked about this so many times, like, yeah, it is condescending, it's internalized misogyny, but then maybe in some ways, because Gen Z, sure, I'm like, okay, you're the youth. I mean, isn't there like a generation younger than Gen Z, like Alpha Gen or something?
Mm-hmm.
But with millennials, maybe it's also the expectation with women and gender is more and more complex now, but I'm thinking like especially women and femmes chasing youth, because once you leave girlhood, then I don't know, I guess nobody cares about you, because youth is associated with beauty and people have all perpetually been obsessed with,
and beauty is associated with power.
Exactly. So maybe there's like social capital in like being a girl.
Oh, there definitely is. That's a really good point.
Because once you're out of that, you're out of the limelight. Nobody gives a shit about you. It's okay. We will look at your girl dinner, but nobody wants to look at your woman dinner. Like, do it behind closed doors.
No one wants to look at your woman dinner. It's true. I've never once photographed one of my woman dinners. No one wants that. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be a pedant, but I do want to be a pedant, because I agree with you. Like, I feel like it plays a role in perpetuating these severe inequalities that are required to sustain capitalism as an oppressive tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps you in a place where you are seeking power through youth, or you are allowing things to be explicitly sold to you, or you are looking at it as something fun and goofy and like joining in on the ritual of something that in its essence is kind of a like misogynistic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like these words should be silly and fun, and I wish that we could utter them and toss them out into the world and have it not catch fire. But it seems unavoidable to do so. Yeah, it's funny because, like, even saying this, like, my brain just goes to, like, where is the line between something that is just a joke that can just be really meaningless and easy and things that are very weighted and heavy? And why can't things stay meaningless and easy and not become weighted and heavy?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just a matter of how much energy and attention gets poured onto these things. Therefore, they become monsters.
Yeah.
Because, like, this shouldn't have become a monster, but it is, because it perpetuates a really sinister form of, like, oppressive capitalism that targets women.
Mm-hmm.
And it also creates a culture of hating women for enjoying something at the same time. It also creates a culture of idolizing youth and imagining yourself as like perpetual baby when you are a powerful and like autonomous adult.
Hashtag girl power.
Yeah, I mean, like, girl power worked for me when I was, like, 10 and I had discovered the Spice Girls because that's how I discovered it. Like, I'm not gonna pretend that I discovered it through Bikini Kill because I was 10, but that was powerful for a 12-year-old. I can't imagine calling myself a girl now, even though we attempted to joke about this before the show.
Yeah.
And as the words were leaving my mouth, I felt, like, utterly disgusting because, like, I don't... I mean, it's gendered. It's very gendered.
Yeah.
But I think the problem, for me at least, is it's just so diminishing, and I feel like a not capable adult.
Totally.
Using that to describe myself or my actions or my ability.
Yeah.
It feels like it takes some power away from me, and that sucks.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know why these things become...
monsters.
Yeah.
Well, that was great, Tasha, but I would like to play some music.
Go for a break.
And go for a break. Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
We'll be right back. The Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Vancouver, what up, man? You already know Forest Fire in the house today, man. Listen, October 1st, Fortune Sound Club. We about to be in the west side of Canada. You already know what it is. Let's get it!
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Word Goblins, broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the unceded Musqueam territory. We had spent the last, 40 minutes, time is irrelevant, talking about girl trends and the use of the girl prefix to describe any and every activity that one can embody. We were spicy about it. I think now is the time for us to maybe just to do a bit of a recap.
Yeah.
Go over some of the things that we brought up when we were feeling really incensed. And yeah, just kind of bring it back home. Something that I thought was really interesting, actually, was before we cut for the break, Hina, you brought up the idea of girl trends being this fixation on youth culture, and like girlhood as like not only just a great marketable category, but like a way to harness power through beauty. And I wonder if you want to like go in a little bit about that, because I think that we spent a lot of time talking about how infantilizing it is, but we didn't actually spend enough time talking about the emphasis on youth that it has.
Yeah. So it feels like Fountain of Youth to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we're all supposed to chase because it's desired. And yeah, sure. I mean, it's no secret. Patriarchy desires it. Success is often equated with being young,
mm-hmm.
and being youthful. And we have an expiry date, especially girls and women, is like milk that as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But also what's interesting about the girl phenomenon is that, ironically enough, it reinforces the gender binary, but also really puts things that are mundane, things that are boring, like, again, going back to lazy meals, but equating it to like, oh, this is what girls do, but really in some weird sense, it's like putting everyday activities under a microscope for people to critique or enjoy or object to. And then, I mean, I don't know. There was a lot of backlash to Girl Dinner, and one of them being that, oh yeah, it's rooted in promoting eating disorders, but then also this whole conversation around body image. And if you look at people, yeah, sure, I get it, people are being silly and goofy and trying to be okay with like putting together whatever they have in their fridge and calling it Girl Dinner, but then in some ways it also gives out the messaging that girls should be eating less. You'll not see a Girl Dinner being a massive burger. I mean, burgers are great, but that's not Girl Dinner. It's very bare bones, and the less on the plate, the more a Girl Dinner it becomes. And so in that sense, I think of, and I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to correlate all of this too hard, but I feel like it's related in the sense that the girl trend is very specific. It's for a specific body type. It's for, you have to be thin and you have to be beautiful and you have to be able-bodied to like fit in that tight category. And it's often unattainable, right? With any popular trend. And it really reinforces the idea, because recently I was looking at that girl definition. Yeah, I did it. Went to Urban Dictionary, of course, or Bible. And I found out it's, that girl is just a fitness girly, which like, again, does not need to be gendered. What about gym bros? But you work out, you eat clean, you live as if you were a wellness influencer. And again, that's very specific. And that's, again, unattainable. But also, something that I was talking to you about, Tasha, is that I feel like we're in the day and age in society and on the internet that we can't call things as they are often, because that's demonized and everything needs to have a positive spin. So what was okay to be called depression meal in 2012 is Girl Dinner now, because hey, we need to impose toxic positivity on everything. And how dare you call this a sad meal? No, girl, you're powerful. It's Girl Dinner.
This is what's sinister about it to me, is like, I was familiar with the depression meal circa Reddit 2004 or whatever, and there was It was funny and it was silly. It wasn't super positive, and it was because of that, it was incredibly hard to market towards that category because it was basically flying in the face of advertising. It's not pushing an ideal. It's not pushing a way to be or a way to look. It's not idolizing anything.
No.
They were like top-down, flash-on photos of food that were really unappetizing. And I feel like Girl Dinner, it builds on this trend, but because of how desirable it has been made to look and feel, makes it a very easy, like, marketable category. It makes it a very easy commodifiable thing. Like, I can see like a Lunchables pack being rebranded as a Girl Dinner.
That's a really good point what you said about depression meals. Nobody is aspiring for that.
No advertiser is going to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
No. And nobody, I mean, you tell me 10 depression meal pizzas, I'm going to stay the heck away from it. So it's so emo. Yeah.
No one wants
it's so
that.
Emo. It's sad. It's mm-hmm. it's funny and
but
it's
there's
sad.
There's a joy in that. Like, under it being so kind of like gross and disgusting and like you don't want it. You don't desire it or want to be part of it or buy into it. However, the community is felt in that moment where you're all kind of like laughing about this dumb thing together, which I think is present in the Girl Dinners. It's just the strange positive and like beautification of it.
And framing of it.
Framing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That makes it a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will throw this. I will throw it right back at you. You said something which really struck a chord with me, and maybe you can elaborate that a little bit as we wrap up. You talked about how adulting is looking more and more different for millennials, starting with millennials to then Gen Zs and the next generation. And so why do we have to baby ourselves or be like, oh, sorry, like we didn't make it? I mean, make it is looking more and more different.
Yeah.
And yeah, can you talk more about that?
All right, so wrap it up but also elaborate. Got it.
That's the assignment.
I feel like my aversion to this comes from a place of thinking and feeling more so these days because I am entering my 30s that the idea of the category of the adult can be a lot of things, and that you can have fun and be playful and experiment and mess with these age categories without needing to infantilize yourself. Like, you don't need to act like you are a baby to be a new form of adult. This is kind of what I was saying when I brought up queer theories, because it deals a lot with like queering the future and imagining a queer future wherein one doesn't necessarily exist for you to look towards. I think this idea of becoming a female adult in 2023 doesn't have to look like girl this or girl that. You don't have to act like you have no agency or power or autonomy to be just a different kind of adult, because it is itself just an age category. I mean, I say this knowing full well, like I don't have many examples of people that are living their adulthood quite like I am. I talk to a lot of people my age about like what being an adult means and feels like to them these days, if only because my 30s feels like a really unmapped chart right now.
Yeah.
It felt fine to not have all of these markers of adulthood when I was in my 20s, but it feels distinctly different in your 30s, and it just kind of hits you in the face. And I know that I don't necessarily want kids, and I know that I'm not going to have a house, and my income is probably going to stay fixed at this point. Good God. But I also know that I'm a deeply unserious person, and I want to still have fun, and I want to still, you know, live my life and find joy in things without having to pretend that I have to be like a kid to do so. And that's really hard to find examples of. And I think we got to do better. I think we got to find examples that are better than, you know, saying that your cucumber on a plate is a girl dinner. That's what I think. And I just, yeah, I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you and I, Tasha, we talk about this a lot, that we don't have a lot of role models, and being in our 30s is crazy because it feels just like some kind of rabbit hole that you're down, and not a lot of like new ways of adulting or new, I said it.
Word of the year 2016.
Yeah, or new age, being a new age adult. And yeah. It's confusing, and it's almost kind of feels like a constant like act of resistance of like, yes, I want to be taken seriously and I have agency and I have power, but also no, I don't want to do all those things that our parents' generations did, but also maybe in some aspects did not have a choice, especially women. I imagine, I think especially for women in my mom's generations, and how we have more choice and privilege and agency. And so it's kind of that constant battle. And I also, when you were talking about queer theory, I was thinking of Afrofuturism as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's one of those things, like, just because it doesn't exist doesn't mean it's not real, or it can't become true,
or it isn't currently true, because like we are currently living it. I guess it's just like everyone needs a reminder that like womanhood or being an adult can look like a lot of, it can be subversive, and you can reject things without needing to revert to like an infantile state.
Yeah.
Like, you can reject things without making yourself seem small. Like, you don't have to do that to be a woman and be subversive, to be in years that are considered your adult years and be subversive. You can do all those things without having to like diminish yourself. Like, you don't have to do that.
Absolutely. Because I think back to this summer, and the two biggest films of the summer, Barbie and Oppenheimer. I mean, yeah. Everywhere I saw Barbie girlfriend, Oppenheimer boyfriend, and then the Barbieheimer. It's like, is this 1960s?
Yeah, and I mean Barbie too, just this movie about like the dream of girlhood. Full disclosure, I never saw it, but I read a lot about it, and
and hence you're an expert.
And so I'm an expert. Listen to everything I say. But there's a portion where like I don't want to spoil it too much, but like one of the main protagonists, or someone that's driving the plot forward, is like a 30-year-old woman who's still playing with dolls. Like, you can experience your adulthood without reverting to a childlike state, because you are doing something subversive. So don't diminish it by making it seem like you are baby, because you are not baby.
You're not baby. That is our thesis statement.
I didn't realize I felt so strong. So I was like, oh my God, get off the soapbox, Tash. What?
No, you know what, Tasha? It had to be said. Fighting a good fight. That does bring us to the end of the show.
All right. Our first episode back.
Yeah.
Wow. Woo. Feels so good.
Yeah. We're going into Christian Girl Autumn.
Indeed we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So go softly into that Christian Girl Autumn, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Take care, folks.
You've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue, right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man, good man feeling bad. No, that's all that is.